I say?
We had a Quebec heater, a big Quebec heater.
Quebec heater number 13 inches across, and it stood that high. And we used that burning coal. We burned 100 pounds a week, didn't we, or something like that?
What are you talking about? We burned 100 pounds a day.
Yeah, well, it was difficult to stay up here for one reason. And
it got to a stage as it is now that coal is not easy to get hold of. You know, get it delivered. You had to get it delivered in these great big sacks, and Buddy was carrying sacks like the Dickens and pouring this stuff in, and it was nice in the sense that, you know, you'd go, the cottage was ramshackle, you'd go to bed and everything was on an open sort of, if it were a modern thing, you'd say it was an open system. There were no doors on anything, but you'd be lying in the bedroom and you could see the flickering of the blue coal flames, you know, on the ceiling in the living room, and you think to yourself, well, that's working, thank heaven, at least we'll survive another night. But when you have an outhouse back there and it's snowing and you have to go toodling out there in your bare feet and pajamas, things get to the point that it isn't nearly as pleasant as you think it is in July. And it was usually by that stage we'd go home to the apartment and we'd stay there until, well, maybe April, and then we couldn't stand city any longer and we'd come back and stay. We were staying longer here, actually, than we were staying in the city. But before we had electricity, it was relatively difficult in the sense that, well, Buddy was laughing, you know, about me using this down with the scrub board down at the river, you know, trying to get things cleaned. And I can remember one May the 1st, it had been a very cold winter and a late breakup. And it was May the 1st, and the ice had been still coming, there had been ice still coming down the river the week before. Not much, but some. And I elected to clean the rug. And Buddy was at work. I took the rug down there to the river and I scrubbed it. And then I went to rinse it. It was quite deep off the end there. And when I went to pull it in, it was heavier. Pull it up, it was heavier than I was. And it pulled me in. And I just lost my breath. You know, when you hear about people not surviving for any length of time in cold water, my breath was gone like that. I didn't have any power anywhere, and I was only about 6 feet off the rock. And somehow I found myself yelling. There wasn't anybody to hear me because there was nobody here. But I was just yelling at the top of my, it was yelling power was about all I had. And somehow I found myself finally lying on the rock. And that was hardly a length of time at all. And these things happen. And I don't know, we found that it was isolated. And I guess it was isolated because we were not functioning as cottagers that came for, say, their holidays. We were functioning in an area that would ordinarily in July have a lot of people, but had nobody. Yeah. And, you know, just having a pump and a wood stove and things like that, it just, everything took a lot of time. And it's the only time in my life that I ever understood, even to a little bit, what the pioneers must have had to do in trying to keep body and soul together when they didn't have electricity, they didn't have even oil lamps, they didn't have anything, they had to do everything for themselves. And I can remember, boy, that water was cold, I'll tell you. But it was fun. It was lots of fun.
We had, we came up in the winter to this old cottage, and you have the stove going, blazing hot as it could, and by the time it got time to go home, then you'd look in there and be warm as toast from about here up. Then there'd be a layer of fog, and there'd be soft snow on the floor.
Soft snow and ice where you brought it in.
That's when you're not wanted in a cottage. We're skiing up here, you see.
And yet, believe it or not, electricity came rather late to this peninsula. And there were cottagers on the peninsula who, I might add, weren't commuting and didn't stay early and late, who were actually complaining about having the electricity come in. Now, I admit it was mostly the men who were complaining. The women weren't complaining about the electricity coming. But the guys thought that roughing it was more fun. And all the women, I can remember, one after another would say something, usually rather quietly, with, it's always nice to just come in and flip on the switch and the stove works and things like that.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was quite late.
There was one couple here, and they said, and he was saying that he didn't want to get out electricity because a roast of beef tastes much nicer when it's cooked over a wood fire. And his wife said, if you want to cook it over a wood fire in midsummer, you do it.
And electricity didn't come here until the 60s on this peninsula. And all through the Gatineau, of course, the electricity was in, but they were complaining. Hydro was saying, we don't want to string all this wire just for a bunch of cottagers. And I suppose they had a point, but eventually it did come, and it's been nicer. Lots of power failures, though, of course, in those days. And everybody in those days, of course, still had all their oil lamps and things ready to go. And if you look at a house up here, almost any house, you'll find several things are normal to the house, even now. One is oil or naphtha gas lamps just sitting there, dusty, waiting, but you get power failures. Usually a Coleman stove of some sort. If you're lucky, a fireplace, because that will save you a lot. And strangely enough, for some reason, almost everybody has a rifle. And we don't shoot, none of us shoot. But we all have a rifle, and I don't know whether this is something atavistic, you know, that is going to go on in the Gatineau for a long time. Because we're neither at war with anybody, neither are there any animals that we shoot either. But
unless we realize that we have some 27 raccoons come eat on this veranda every night. And if one of them comes in and it's obviously sick, then it's going to get shot. But because we're a case of rabies just waiting to begin here.
Yeah, I see what you mean with all of the animals coming
in.
Yeah, that's right.
So generally speaking, I'm not so sure that the cottagers have rifles, but certainly the people who are living here permanently do. And I've often wondered in my mind why we keep them. And we keep them clean, too.
Maybe just in case.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
it's kind of odd, but it's...
I'll tell them about the time that the hydro meter reader came here.
Yeah, and when we built the place in 1970, you will remember the October 1970 crisis of Quebec, when various things were going along, and the War
Loans
Measures
and
Act was in, and there were rumors flying around that the FLQ were in various places and things like that, and it was the only time that I remember we'd been told to watch for people, that we had kept the rifle loaded. And I was lying out on the side veranda sunning myself with the rifle beside me. You'd think the Mau Mau were coming, you know. It was kind of ridiculous when you look back on it. And this guy came down the steps. And I picked up the rifle. And I can shoot. And I've got spoons to prove that I can shoot. And I picked up the rifle, you know, shot the bolt. This poor man saying, "Madame, Madame, I'm the electrical inspector." The poor thing, I felt so sorry for him. And I'm sorry, fellows, I'd have shot him.
You were actually thinking of the... The October crisis was quite a shock for people.
Well, it was a big shock. But you know...
Well, they put bombs in mailboxes.
The bombs in mailboxes had preceded the crisis, but nobody knew the size of the FLQ. They didn't know how far they would go, and they didn't know what they were doing, and they didn't know what they were after.
Yeah.
And they'd already killed one person, and some of the FLQ cell were on the run. One of the places that a lot of people run to is the Gatineau. They don't run there here so often, you understand, but it's a kind of a place where, in October, for instance, there are lots of summer cottages along the river you can break into and live in. And so the QPP had more or less told everybody to be on the lookout for people, and people were running kind of edgy, and I'll never forget that poor electrical inspector. It was very sad. He was terrified.
Probably got the same welcome from everybody around.
Maybe he was getting used to it. I don't know. But if I'd been them, I wouldn't have come at that particular moment to inspect the electrical wiring.
Came in, we would bring them on the train, and we'd pick my father up in the rowboat. That way.
So you'd have to go back and forth morning and evening too. Did a lot of other people commute at that time? Because we've heard that there was a special commuter's train.
Yes, there was. Yeah. Ran on Sunday too. Only the reverse on Sunday. It came up from the city in the morning and went down at night.
Or excursion.
I remember I was paddling down to pick my father up at Burnett Station, which is just down there, and I was rowing down, and a boy that lived in a house across the river, which you can't see, named Connor, he and a friend were in a canoe paddling over towards Burnett too, and I outran them in the rowboat, and they were quite chagrined. They couldn't keep up with the rowboat. The boat was built by McCommon or something like
no,
that?
No, Will Common.
Will
Mr.
Common.
Will Common.
And he built nice boats.
They had a lovely shape, a flat bottom boat, which was built by the Will Commons at Wakefield. I have never been in a flat bottom boat that rowed that way. It was balanced as well as a canoe. It was sensational. And of course, the whole way of building those boats died with old Mr. Will Common. There were no more of them. And boy, I felt sorry when we finally had to take apart that old flat bottom boat and burn it up because there'd be no more. But man, that was a good boat. Yeah.
Now they got high walls, so that you're rowing and you're reaching out like this. In that boat, you were out like this, much easier.
Okay. Sort of almost a scow rowboat, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were beautifully balanced and beautifully shaped, even for a flat bottom, typical flat bottom boat. You could always tell them they were a hallmark of the Gatineau. Just like all the boats built across the world, you can tell they're regionally a particular shape. And Buddy spent a lot of his life rowing back and forth to Burnett Station and picking up groceries, or you could row up to the Tip Top where Mr. Wilson would supply you with groceries if you had to.
The post office was halfway down the hill for Cascades. Pick up your mail there too. It was run by Mrs. Wilson. I think it's Billy's mother. It's an interesting place. Remember once she wasn't feeling well and somebody went in there to get the mail and she picked it up and she said, "I don't know, find it yourself." We had, my father, first of all, had to go to Burnett. And then they got a station at Pine Road. And then finally, because there were a lot of people here who wanted to commute, then they stopped at Ramsey Road.
Service go out?
I don't know.
Well, let's look at it this way. I think it quit 1950 because wasn't making money. CP is good at not doing things when things aren't making money. Because we got pretty nearly hit a couple of times when we were coming out from the log cabin.
Yes.
And that was in 1950 or 1951.
You have never experienced such a thrill as when you come down through trees, over the tracks and in more trees. And as you go across the tracks, you hear this loud horn blowing at you, and there's a great cloud of snow coming towards you with a snowplow in front and going like a bat out of hell.
That would be quite an incentive to look forward.
Yes, it is.
They didn't blow their horns.
Yeah, but you don't hear it in the woods.
Oh, really?
In a car. A car is noisy.
We had to come up through a cut which was much higher than the car onto the tracks. There was no way when you went out, and of course it didn't have lights or anything flashing or bells, because it was just a private crossing, and there's no way you can hear with that kind of embankment, or even have it hinted to you that the train is somewhere down the line, but you don't know whether, and you know it hasn't passed, but you don't know how close it is, or whether it's running on time or what it's doing. We spent a lot of time coming out in the morning, just almost, boy. However, we never got hit.
Remember once we were.
So would it be 1950 or 1951 that they stopped running the commuter train?
Because no one was commuting anymore. They were going by car.
Oh, people were commuting, but it's just not enough to make it pay.
You see, if you go in by train, you'd stop at the Union Station there. And from there, you had to find your way to work. Well, that means taking a bus, or in those days, a streetcar. And you have to spend a lot of time traveling, much longer than if you take your car.
Yes. So as soon as cars became more common, a lot of people used them. Then.
Sure, yeah. Now, the cars are too common. I think we'd like to go back to commuting in the train. But you'd still have to take a bus from where
now
the train
you can't stop. Commute on the train because the train doesn't come to the right places.
Yeah.
It doesn't come to downtown Ottawa anymore.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it has to take a great big round the sort of round circle sort of way around Ottawa through West Hull to get into that station out at Alta Vista. It would waste so much time. You'd be getting up in, you know, in sort of not midnight, but sort of 4 o'clock in the morning to actually get. You'd be ruined.
People do commute with the bus nowadays, but the bus goes by here at 7 o'clock. And
yes.
If you find your car can't go, nobody leaves before 7:30. And by then, the bus is gone by half an hour.
Yes,
so all you can do is weep bitter tears and go back and go to bed. It's a horrible
thing. The bus, I don't think, seems to be paying its way either these days, but...
$8 a trip or something like that, isn't it?
It's fairly expensive a trip, and we don't see very many people in the bus when we're following it down.
If you live on the road and your place of work is near the bus terminal, it's fine. But we're a mile from the road here.
Yes, that's true.
I'm charging up.
Remember
to get there to catch the bus, you've got to start out about 6:30 to get the bus.
Remember the time we were going up the Ramsey Road in the misty morning, I think October or November, and we get halfway up the hill and the huge Hereford bull with a big copper ring in his nose.
And a chain dangling.
Square in the middle of the road.
Standing square in the middle of the road.
So I said to Isabel, I'm driving, you get out and chase him. She said, no, you know about bulls, you get out and chase him.
So we just sort of sat there. Eventually he wandered off. I thought, mercy.
Huge thing. Of course, in memory it was, and at that time of the day, and that circumstance with the mist, it would be much bigger, you know. Actually was.
He wasn't small.
No, he wasn't.
And he had ugly little red eyes. And I think he was loaded for bear. I think that he thought the car was challenging him. Poor buddy. Anyway, we just sat there and he went away.
The oldsters are dying out, of course.
Yeah.
Like I retired this year. That's a landmark you don't want to hit. But we hit it. And there comes a time when you cannot keep up with the work that's entailed. That's all. We say we won't, but we will.
Actually, on this peninsula, the cottages have not changed hands many numbers of times. But he's quite right. The old guard mostly have moved out. Most of the cottages have changed hands at least once. Some of them have changed several times. And generally speaking, these cottages on this peninsula are not rented. They're owned, and the people who own them use them. And one or two of them have not changed hands. But the people who own them are very old and not using them, and their children are sort of waiting for them to go off to the great doghouse in the sky, and then they'll do something about them. But I can only think of one, actually, in that particular circumstance. And all the others have changed hands at least once.
As this one has. Well, we bought it from
but
my
it's
parents.
It's still in the family. It hasn't changed to another. It will eventually. But
Isabel mentioned the log cabin. That's where we spent our honeymoon. It's a little cabin that used to live over near where the brick farmhouse is over here. And Tommy McDermott moved it down to a little place in the woods there, all by itself, a little clearing. And he used to live in it. And then we got married, and he rented it to us for a couple or three summers or so. It was a lovely little place. You'd be lying in bed, and you'd see, going up the curtain, you'd see a little something going up, an indent going up, and then a mouse head peek over the top of the look at you over the top.
Mice would sit on the end of the bed and stare at you.
And they drowned in our raspberry
mice
jam
would,
pot.
Mice would drown in my pea soup.
The place was overrun with mice pretty thoroughly.
It was full of deer mice. I mean, it was absolutely full of them. And they were dear little things, but kind of pestiferous.
One of them, you know, the first typewriter we ever had, because Isabella was going through university and she needed to type notes and so on. And we left it, of course, on the table. Came up one day and the thing would not work. You'd press the key and nothing would happen. It wasn't electric, it was an energy-saving device that used only finger power. And I turned it over to see if I could see anything in the bottom of it, and a whole bunch of peanuts dropped out of it.
That was the storehouse.
Then it worked.
That's all right. The summer cottage that was here before this house, we came up one spring, and I had inadvertently, we'd been up in the wintertime, I had inadvertently left a piece of butter out on the table, and the squirrels had taken the butter in little pieces and put it all up on the rafters of the thing. And so when he started the fire, you understand, suddenly rancid butter started dripping all the way down onto the floor and onto the rugs and everything else. Oh. That's one of the things with cottages, you know. You come up in the springtime expecting the worst, and usually you get it. And I've had people, I can remember hearing Buddy in this house on the phone, still things happen to people. I can hear him saying, oh yes, 5 baby raccoons, you say, in the sleep house. Well, Mr. So-and-so, just leave them there and the mother raccoon will come and get them. So yes, cottages are kind of interesting. I think there's a kind of a book in every cottage and every cottage area, but the thing that's changed most in aspect is that the ruralness of West Hull has gone. The farming communities, people are not farming. I mean, if you drive from Chelsea up to Wakefield, there's hardly a herd of cattle anywhere now. And yet, when we were first here, it was haying time all summer, you know, and everything like that, and that's all gone.
Are there a lot of abandoned farms, or is it they've been converted into houses?
Mostly they've been converted into houses. Even the barns have been converted into houses. Yeah, it's changed, the ruralness of it, and the so-called farm vote doesn't have the impact that it had at one time. There used to be a situation where, depending on the amount of land you owned, you got a certain amount of votes. In other words, your voting power was vested in the amount of land you had. And so the farm vote was very, very strong. You see, if you had one lot, you only got one vote. But if they had 2,000 acres, they got a heck of a lot more voting power. And so the farm vote could vote anything in it wanted to. Well, of course, now that doesn't exist anymore, and neither do the farms, so things certainly have changed.
What were these not, these weren't electoral votes, were they?
I don't know what they were.
Because I've heard of...
They were for real. I'm not making it up.
Oh, I don't know, but that's astonishing. That sounds like... I didn't realize that there ever was property.
It's a good scheme, you see, because the farmers are...
The ones concerned.
Yeah, he's most concerned. All the rest are cottagers. Who cares about that?
This was not something that was universal in Canada, but it certainly was universal in Quebec. Now, the electoral...